Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870 WWL. Mike Dettay along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, will be joined at 5:45 by Steve Geller for our triple option feature.
I'm all excited about my triple option today. I'm not going to let the cat out of the bag yet. But I'm excited. I'm like, and it's a positive. I'm going to give you one hint. It's some positive news locally in the sports world. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, you talking about the Pelicans?
No, I'm not going to. No, I'm not going to give no more hints. That's the only hint
right.
I'm giving.
at 4:35, it's our exclusive here on WWL, quarterback to quarterback, Drew Brees, along with Bobby Hebert. And at 5:10 this afternoon, the new president of LSU from Golden Meadow, Louisiana, Wade Roos. We'll have Wade on, as I think Wade's maybe headed back to Lake Charles. So we're going to catch Wade on his cell as he's headed back and talk to the new president of LSU. And then again at 5:45, triple option. 6:25, Jeff Nowak talking about the Saints. And Bob, you and I haven't had a chance really to talk about it other than when we did TV about the two moves. We only knew about one back then.
Yeah, and the last minute, right before the trade deadline, they pulled another one. And I'm pleasantly surprised someone wanted Trevor Penning. But
I'm
that shows you
got anything.
That shows you how beat up the Chargers are in the offensive line. That's why, Mike, the Chargers were one of my dark horses. They ain't going to do anything. They lost two of the best, in the conversation, two best offensive tackles
and
in
then
the league.
Third offensive line.
Yeah, so that's why.
The connection would be, and Charlie, I told this to Charlie yesterday, is Joe Hartis, who's now the general manager with the Chargers now. He was the director of player personnel for the Ravens back when Trevor Penning came out. He must have had a high grade on him. And I think he feels, okay, maybe a change of scenery, you're doing well. Again, you just watch him. Bobby, he's not technically sound. It's nothing to do with
bad feet. Power. And, Mike, this is Trevor Penning, what he's done. In his first three games and his return, his most notable contribution to the team was in the form of penalties. That's all he's contributed. Negative. He had three holding penalties and one false start in six games. Remember the one time it's like, okay, that you got to move your feet. And then he'd be getting beaten and he would basically grab the guy. No, that's holding. It was so obvious. You know how you can call holding almost every play? Well, no, but if you make it so obvious and your hands are outside the pad, they got to call that. So I was like, man, here we got a good play. It doesn't count Trevor Penning holding.
I talked to Jim Nagy, who was at that time the director of the Reese's Senior Bowl, and he talked about Mike. When we brought him here, everybody.
But didn't he do good at the Senior Bowl?
He did pretty well there. And he was like, Mike, he was overwhelming. But it's a big jump from college football
from
to
Northern
the NFL.
Iowa.
And now, he didn't win as many matches at the Senior Bowl as he had done in college because he had never went up against guys that were that big, that fast, that strong.
Well,
and his technique work was, as Jim would say, middle of the road. It wasn't really good.
Well, what he had going for him because he was aggressive. And
yes.
Football, you have to be aggressive. But to play at the NFL level, you got to be aggressive and have good technique. You got to have both if you're going to last and be able to contribute. But, that's why the questions, he went to Northern Iowa, not Iowa Hawkeye, but Northern Iowa.
Yeah, he was like 215 pounds as a senior.
And guys can make it. They don't necessarily have to be at, power of five and all that.
Look, Teron Armstead.
Yeah. Arkansas,
Willie Rolfe at Louisiana
Arkansas
Tech.
Arkansas Pine Bluff, yeah. Louisiana Tech. So,
and so you can make it. The only problem.
What a great opportunity. Think about this. Okay, if he don't make it now, he couldn't be going to a better situation. The Chargers and Harbaugh. Harbaugh is going to give him the business. I mean, behind, I don't think publicly, but behind the door, he said, come on. And he's kind of on his last leg. You know who else I think is going to kick ass? Watch Rashid Shaheed with the
Seahawks. In that offense?
And Kubiak knows that. Kubiak knows the explosive plays that he's had. Well, I think we could utilize him. And on the other end, other side, you have JSN. And
JSN is playing.
He's loving that.
Okay, if you take Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson off the table, is there a receiver playing as well as he is?
No, I always say he's the real Ohio State receiver. What he's done with the Seahawks, Mike, that's going to make him even be a better player. And Sam Darnold, how he's playing with the confidence, he'll get the ball out there. I mean, to me, if I look at Rashid Shaheed, that was one area that the scouts got right. Because if you look at Shaheed, he joins the Saints as an undrafted free agent out of Weber State and a small school who's – and Mike, and I said, how can that be an undrafted free agent? But what happened, and we talked about this, he was coming off a season-ending injury in his final collegiate season
with his knee.
And Weber State. Yeah. So that's why – so we helped develop him.
Did we see him at all in training camp other than working out – on his own along the side?
No,
nothing.
When he first met, but the Saints, dude, that was truly, when you talk about diamond in the rough, that was truly diamond in the rough. But he blossomed, so to speak, in one of the most electrifying playmakers in the NFL. You remember, I never forget this, I think it was against the Bengals in the Dome. He turned his first career touch when he ran that in around in 2022 season. He went 44-yard touchdown. He looked like, right, oh, look how fast he is. He hit it, and he was getting it. So when I look at what he accomplished, Mike, they don't let you be all pro just because they like you. He had to earn that. And then his value, added value in the return game, look, I look at that, him being first team all pro as a return specialist in 23. If you look, four of Shaheed's 64 career punt returns gained 40 or more yards, and a couple of them went for touchdowns. So I know Seattle's aware of that also. You know, they're adding, because special teams, how did they kick out? But, Mike, they got more than one punt returner now on the roster. And then, Mike, you look at it, 719 yards receiving in 2023. That's when he was all pros and return specialist. And he accumulated at least 70 yards in four of his first five games. Now, this would caught my attention. He accumulated at least 70 yards in four of his first five games on the offensive coordinator, Clint Kubiak. So he'll know how to use it. To me,
makes them a more dangerous team today than they were Sunday. And, man, you look at how good
and people
Seahawks
might say, well, why are we getting rid of Rashid? Well, they weren't going to pay him. They're not going to pay two receivers. This is telling me they're going to pay,
Chris Olave.
Now, some fans are like, why? I don't want to pay him like $20-something million, $25 million. Well, that's just the market and what they think of Chris Olave. So I know the front office, they hoping Chris Olave excels and finishes the back end of the season. Doesn't matter if it's against the Titans, Jets, or Dolphins, an NFL game. But they want Chris Olave definitely to step up big time because they're going to pay him. Just goes to show you the play calling and how you utilize a receiver. And nothing against Kellen Moore. It could be maybe Derek Carr. Like if Derek Carr or Aaron Rodgers was our quarterback right now, well, we have one win. I think we'd have three wins, maybe four, but you're still not winning anything. But I can tell you, Rashid Shaheed, when it was like bombs away, Derek Carr, they could throw the deep ball. I think he'll have that in
Seattle. That he could do really well.
But it just goes to show you with the quarterbacks he's playing with Rattler. And you'd have to say it was with Spencer Rattler because you can't really count Chuck into that. But if you look at it, Mike, you know what he averaged per catch? This is Rashid Shaheed. He averaged 11.3 yards per catch, 5 yards less below his career average. So now think about it. That's a big difference. Five yards?
Big difference.
You know, when you start getting up, you know, like 16 plus in that range, 17, no. And that just shows you how we were getting them the ball, we didn't exploit that enough with the deep ball.
Now, the important thing, what you do with the draft choices. You can accumulate all you want. You better hit on them.
Well, the same thing with the Jets. Look at the Jets, how many picks they have. If they pick the right players, the Jets might finally turn the corner. But that's a big if.
They better get the quarterback situation straightened out.
You got to get the quarterback. The one thing, you know what? I think people, they got Aaron Glenn as the head coach. He might not even last. But the one thing about Aaron Glenn, he was around Detroit, so he witnessed how Detroit turned around.
That three-win first season.
And Mike, so I'm telling you, that can maybe – so if you're a Jets fan, there's a lot of them out there.
There's a lot more than you might think.
Yeah. There's a light at the end of the tunnel. But now with Vele, Devon Vele.
Now, he's got to step up his game. He's got to play more now.
Play more. He's got more opportunities and what he's going to do to warrant and show that, oh, that was a nice play getting him from the Broncos.
Bob, we're going to go to break and we're going to come back. I see somebody wrote something you've talked to me about. Bobby knows all about bad footwork. Jim Dombrowski stepped on Bobby's foot, broke it week 3 against San Francisco in 1986. Yeah. But, Bob, the other part is what happened the following play.
The thing is, it wasn't bad footwork. It was just he was trying to block Charles Haley. and Charles Haley, no, we broke, Dombrowski and I both broke our fifth metatarsal and our right same foot.
Back-to-back plays.
Back-to-back plays.
By the same dude.
Knocked out the starting tackle and the starting quarterback at San Francisco. I've never seen that happen.
It goes to show you, Charles Haley had some issues off the field and getting along.
Well, the 49ers, they want to get rid of him, but he did some outrageous things to the GM. I can't even say that on regular radio.
And one in particular.
Yeah.
He watered his plant,
He watered his plant with his you-know-what. But anyway, in his office, so you're going to have to trade me. I'm out of control. And then he goes to Dallas, helps him win a Super Bowl. But you know the one thing? Two Super Bowls. It just goes to show you, Mike, though. Okay, I think this is right. I think Charles Haley is from James Madison.
Yes, he is.
I always say, not Dolly Madison, but James Madison. So they'll find you wherever you're at. So.
Yeah, Hoss might like that.
Oh, yeah. No, Charles Haley was a beast. He was a little crazy, though.
We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870 WWL right after this break.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters, your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL. Want to remind everybody at 4:35, it'll be our quarterback-to-quarterback segment, our exclusive here on the Big 870 WWL. Drew Brees along with Bobby Hebert. Bob, we got a texter asks, who pays for the moving expenses for a player that's traded? You want to answer that?
Well, you got enough money. What they do is they buy you a plane ticket. You know, like they'll give you a flight to get to Seattle.
Now, the other stuff you got to take care of.
Yeah, the moving expenses and all. Yeah, because they're paying you a lot of money. Yeah, that's. Now, if you are maybe a practice squad guy or something, then they probably negotiate something with moving expenses.
But it goes to show you when you think you got a shot, then you're willing to give up stuff. Look what the Colts did. As good as they've played, they give up 2 first-round picks for Sauce Gardner.
Well, they're all in. That's why you know who has the pressure now, Mike? And they expecting him to be like Sam Darnold is Indiana Jones, Daniel Jones. They think he's the answer, Mike. When you give it up, the capital they gave up to get Sauce Gardner, because they think, okay, where do we need to get better? And now Sauce Gardner, Mike, his first 2 years was unbelievable. He ain't done too good this year. I think he's one that's motivated if the team's winning or losing. And he's going to a winning team, so he knows he has to respond. But he has that kind of ability.
Okay, I know you don't like to say this, but I think the Cowboys did good picking up Quinnen Williams from the Jets. He's a guy that before he had his breakout year, we had Pete Jenkins on.
He's another one that's kind of like turns it on and off.
Yeah, he's got a little bit of a switch.
Yeah.
And so Pete told me, Mike, that's a guy, and he didn't call him Quinnen. He says his name is Quinton Williams. I said, Pete, you sure you got that white? I said, because I see Quinnen Williams. He's like, it's close to that, Mike.
I just call him Q.
He said, I'm telling you, he's got a breakout year, and he sure did. and he's worked with Jenkins in the offseason about getting his technique down. Man, the Cowboys got a guy in the middle that can blow things up now.
Well, yeah, but they still, their secondary is not too good.
Not good.
No, they get Jacoby Brissett was eating them up and stuff. And speaking of Jacoby Brissett,
full-time starter.
Yeah, the Cardinals are going with him. And the team responds to Jacoby Brissett. I think Kyler Murray might be the definition of like prima donna. You know, I think he has kind of that little Napoleon syndrome. You know, like Bryce is little, like Kyler Murray, you know, who we play in Bryce, you know, this week with the Panthers. But he's just a better attitude. Kyler Murray is one of those. And, Mike, they were trying to make him work out because they guaranteed him like $150 million.
We had on Mark Schlereff yesterday, and he was like, Mike, I don't know how the Panthers are winning. He said, listen, I think a lot what Rico Dowdle is doing, running the ball.
But
he said, I don't think they're that talented, but they're 5-4. They figured out a way to win in close games. And he said, you got to give a team really a lot of credit when they can figure that out, how to win. But he said, come on, they are probably 2 years away from really piecing something together that could really challenge the Buccaneers.
Well, even if it's look how they spanked Atlanta, remember, like with 30-3 or something. And you look at their GM and where they're at, Mike, he might be, I'm trying to think of his name. Who's the GM now? From
Dan Morgan.
And boy, talk about tough linebacker. I don't know if this Christian Rosenboom is like that. You know, he sees, you know how you play, see someone. He led the team with career-high 15 tackles.
That's
you know, anytime
a lot
you get,
of tackles.
Yeah, when you're looking at an NFL game, and he had 15 tackles, a tackle for loss, a forced fumble last week, the only player to do that so far to be that productive in the NFL in a game. So you look at him, you know who else has stepped up for them, Mike? Is that the receiver we all liked, T-Mac.
McMillan.
McMillan, yeah. Yes. He's ranked second right now in the NFL in receiving yards. And receptions among rookies this season.
Okay, in the locker room, and you can hear him kind of sparring a little bit about that. You know, it's hard for you to get people to overthrow you. And he was like, well, Bryce did it a couple of times, and they were kind of needling one another.
Right.
Because, man, just take a look at that guy. I mean, he's no 6'2" receiver. He's 6'5" plus. It's hard to overthrow him.
No, and he's noted for making contested catches. So our young secondary is going to be challenged again. It don't get any easier.
First things first, if you don't stop Rico Dowdle from running the ball, they are going to run him 30 times a game.
Well, Mike, that's pretty close because if you look, last week he had 130 yards rushing on 25 carries, a couple of touchdowns. And now the only player to do this season – he's third. It was his third game with 130-plus rushing yards in 2025. And like I said, the only player to do that this season. So, no, they're going to ride that horse. He leads the NFL with 103 carries, 652 rushing yards since week five. So they're leaning on him hard.
Okay, you always talk about quarterbacks steal all the thunder. And it does because of the position. But did anybody think Rico Dowdle would do this? Anything close?
No, because you know who's been a thorn in the Saints' side is Chuba Hubbard. Remember how Chuba Hubbard would always like, man, he's always doing good against the Saints. And now, Mike, he's behind the scenes now. You know, they still give him the opportunities to get rushing touchdowns. He's had two in the last three home games in Charlotte. And if you look, the last time he played the Saints, he had 72 rushing yards and two rushing touchdowns in the last meeting. So he's still a part of that rotation. But Dowdle is the guy that they're going to lean on.
Okay.
And, Mike, would you believe this? Now, you look at the sample size. Who you think would have a higher QB quarterback rating, Spencer Rattler or Bryce Young?
I would say Spencer.
Yeah. Now, 86.8 and Bryce Young, 81.5. Looking at Bryce has 11 touchdowns, 8 interceptions, where Spencer had 8 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. So as of late, he didn't protect the football. But now we're going with Shuck, you know, making his first career start in Week 9. So it's an important game for his development because you know why it's a 2-for-1? And the Saints organization is going to want to see how Tyler Shuck plays against Carolina, plays against the Falcons. You know, then he's got another chance against Tampa Bay because – Mike, first off, you know, you are rebuilding and you're trying to be relevant. What do you have to do? You have to win your division games. I'm not saying go undefeated in division, but you can't be like 2-4. You know, you got to be 4-2, if not, or better.
The crazy
you know, like
thing,
Tampa Bay is.
We talked about this yesterday. When Sean Payton was coach of the Saints, he dominated when they play against Atlanta and
Tampa. Tampa Bay.
Not so much against the Panthers.
No, it was 50-50.
Almost 50-50
yeah,
at best.
It was right. No, Carolina under Sean. Sean didn't really have their number. It was like flip a coin who's going to win.
We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870 WWL, and it'll be our quarterback-to-quarterback segment. Bobby Hebert along with Drew Brees right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL, Mike Dettelier along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, where we hook up with Drew. Finally last night, Bob, Pelicans pull a W out. Well, hold on a second. We got in touch with Drew.
But who did they beat? Come on. We got to talk about that later.
Yeah, we can talk about it a
little
bit.
You should beat the Hornets. Come on.
Yeah. But, man, it was a taffy pull at the end. It's our exclusive here on WWL, the Big 870, our quarterback-to-quarterback segment with Drew Brees along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. Drew, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
No problem, guys. How you doing?
All right, Drew, look, first the big news reported today. Hall of Famer Drew Brees is joining Fox Sports to become a full-time NFL game analyst. Fox NFL Sunday's Big Three game analysts are now, boy, that's the three musketeers, the best of the best, Tom Brady, Greg Olsen, and Drew Brees. You had to be excited, Drew, to have that opportunity.
Yeah, I do, absolutely. You know, it's been something I've been thinking about for a long time, just waiting for the right opportunity. You know, I've got great relationship with a lot of the networks, had conversations over the years, but really like Brad Zager and everybody at Fox. Had the chance to do some things with them this year specifically. Just really like the culture there. Really like the fit. Great opportunity. I'll be in the booth with Adam Amin, who I think is a young up and comer on the play-by-play side of things. So really, really excited about the opportunity with Fox.
You know, Drew, every Sunday after the game, you know, I do this. I host a post-game show. Boy, it was a whole lot easier doing that show when you were playing. And, you know, I have to talk to Saints fans who are upset. They're angry. They're depressed. And, you know, I said, man, I maybe should have graduated in psychology or to be a counselor, but now I need some counseling. I mean, Drew, is the glass half empty or half full? Right now, I'm kind of on half empty, maybe almost empty. Encourage me, because man, I'm too old to deal with this.
Look, man, it's always frustrating, and I feel like it's become a little more interesting around these trade deadlines, where you look at the trades and you ask yourself, you know, what are we trying to accomplish? You know, is it more the idea of, hey, it's rebuild, let's get draft picks and let's think about how we want to build this for the future? Is it, hey, we're trying to win now, and so we're either trading for people to do that, or, you know, we're getting rid of people to do that? But I don't know. It's tough when you lose. I mean, look, you know, the first one that popped up on my feed yesterday was Shahid. Look, I'm one of his biggest fans. You know, I think he's one of the more explosive players in the league, and given the right opportunities, I think he can really shine. So it's unfortunate that he's gone. You know, Trevor Penning was the other one, you know, that
but he could go. We didn't care about him.
Yeah.
Going.
Yeah. I know. I'm just going through the list here.
Right.
But again, you know, I think for Saints fans, look, they deserve a winner, and it's amazing what that does just waking up on Monday morning, you know, after a big Saints victory, and just the way you approach your work week, and you got a little extra pep in your step. And unfortunately, those have been hard to come by so far this year.
You know, Drew, I guess when it rains, it pours. And right now, the Saints are experiencing the franchise's worst start in over 40 years. I mean, think how old you are. And then when I think about that, I mean, I was in college then, but can you recollect or remember, like, my understanding, I think your worst season record-wise, was it a Chargers team maybe y'all won, were like 4-12, but then the next year's team y'all were 12-4. Is that correct? And if that is correct, what I'm looking at, what was the attitude and the messaging to guide, like, your teammates and everyone to be pulling in the same direction through those dark times?
Yeah, I mean, look, you go through rough patches. You know, I mean, look, I can I can remember a patch like that back in 2007, if you recall. You know, 2006, we have that storybook year, go to the NFC Championship. You come back in 2007 with high expectations. I think we lost our first four in a row. You know, so we started off 0-4. But then next thing you know, we get a big win and we're 5-5. You know, we rattle off, I think, 5 of 6.
Yep.
And we end up 5-5 and kind of pull ourselves back into striking distance where we then have a shot at, you know, making the playoffs. So I think you're going to have those lulls for whatever reason. You know, maybe it's just you're still trying to establish your identity. Maybe you've had some injuries and you're just trying to figure out where everybody fills in and kind of where they fit. But, you know, I think the great teams have the ability to kind of reset, refocus, reestablish their identity and get back on track.
You know, Drew, you had the Houdat Nation spoiled with the high-powered offenses. But right now, the offense just stinks. I mean, what it is, and what I mean, you got to score points. You know, like you always look at scoring offense, scoring defense. And in two games, we have a total of 13 points. Right now, we're averaging like 15 points a game. How do you evaluate the problem? Because it seems at times we move the ball, but the red zone, no. It's like, okay, at least we can get a field goal if we don't turn it over. But you think, can it be fixed on the back end of the season, or is that just going to be a process that we might be dealing with? Only scoring in the teens as far as an offense?
Well, here's the thing. You know, you start the season with Spencer Rattler, who I think has a ton of ability and I think has the ability to play for a long time at a high level in this league. You know, unfortunately, we were close in a lot of games. We just weren't able to find ways to win. Look, for various reasons, right? But we're one or two plays away in a lot of those games. You know, then the move's made to go to Tyler Shuck, which... Hey, now you're kind of starting over, you know. I think we have to remember, here's a guy who, yes, he's got a lot of college experience, but at the same time, man, it's going to take a little while for him to adapt to the NFL and to his teammates and the system and all those other things. So, in a way, it's like you're starting over again, you know. And so you got to build this thing back up there. I think what's important for people to recognize is that, you know, defensively, those guys suffer a lot when the offense isn't producing, you know, what that does for their confidence, what it does for, you know, time of possession, what it does for momentum, you know, all those things play a huge factor, you know, and I think I was always really conscious of that offensively was, you know, look, we kind of had our lulls or, you know, you had your times where maybe you weren't as productive as you wanted to be offensively, but very quickly I would think to myself, how can I help our defense, right? Like we have to stay on the field.
Possess the ball.
We got to go down and get points because it just gives them a little more momentum, right? Like the greatest thing we could do for our pass rushers was to get a little bit of a lead or get into moments where they could pin their ears back and go get the opposing quarterback. You know, like you have to recognize what a role that plays. And when we say complementary football, that's what I mean.
You know, Drew, so I don't know, when you look, I was going to ask you, what's your, you know, you kind of explained it, evaluation of Shuck's first start, but I thought he's behind the eight ball. His first start, if we play in the Rams, man, I like the Rams were playing around with us. I mean, when you look at, I don't know if I've ever seen so many negative stats like this. We had 10 first downs the whole game. I can remember you'd get 10 first downs in a quarter. I remember against the Cowgirls, I think we had like 42 one game y'all had. Then I look at time possession, 16 minutes. I mean, it was just – I never saw this negative a stat. But I look at the Rams maybe representing the NFC in the Super Bowl. They'll have a great chance to maybe represent the NFC to go to the Super Bowl. But, I mean, to me it's not a fair – how can – Bobby said, what do you think of Shuck? I said, let me see him continue to play. I don't think it was fair. It is the NFL. You know, I think he has to have a good showing against Carolina – coming up, we play at Carolina, and then they're very opportunistic. Drew, what have you seen at Carolina? They're like 5-4 right now, and then you have a young guy, and Bryce Young. To me, I never forget this picture. I seen Bryce Young going to training camp. He had a backpack. The backpack looked too big for him. It looked like he was going to show up at night like a freshman in high school. I go, that's the quarterback for Carolina? No, Drew, you look like a giant of a man. Bryce looked little there. So what do you think, our chance? I don't know, Carolina, even though they're 5-4, division game. I mean, what do you think come this Sunday?
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a game we got to win. Look, I think they're playing pretty well. They've got a little momentum. They've probably lacked some consistency, but at the same time, they're probably a team who feels like they're trending up. And they're a divisional opponent. You know, and so I always feel like these games mean a little bit more, you know, and what a great, you know, maybe coming out party for Tyler Shuck and the team, you know, after the trade deadline where it's like, all right, you know, just like wipe the slate clean. You got to kind of find those moments where you just feel like, all right, man, we're starting fresh. And I think this is one of those times where you say, hey, we're starting fresh. We'll get off on the right foot, go get a divisional win. This would mean a lot for the team, the organization, and the fan base right now.
Yeah, Drew, I was going to ask you, because right now the frustration with the fan base, and you want them to care. Oh, I can't wait to watch the Saints playing on Sunday, and not them go. Not like they're living out in, you know, California and L.A. And I don't know. I'm gonna go to the beach today. I'm gonna do something else. Where it means that much that you want to be in that number and watch the team. But when the frustration where it's at right now, how can you know like the ownership rebuild like the fan base, the Who Dat Nation's energy? And the trust, because right now, they're like, "Well, Bobby, we're getting all these assets now. You do trades and you get the draft picks. We still got to pick the right players. And you've been part of teams where we've had great drafts and young guys contributing at a high level. But they bring up to me, Bobby, who's picking Marcus Davenport, Peyton Turner, and Trevor Penning? And those picks have to work out." So how can the ownership rebuild that trust? Because right now they're not trusting what they're doing as far as putting the team in the position to win.
Yeah, look, I know it hasn't always worked out, but I feel like historically, especially when I look at the latter part of my career, I thought we did an outstanding job of drafting core players, really in all rounds. Like, we were finding them everywhere. We were doing a great job in the first round, which is the round where you really feel like you got to hit players that can be 8 to 10 year starters for you. But especially with the undrafted free agents, the guys like the Shaheeds, and the Lance Moores and the Pierre Thomases and, those type of guys. And then I always felt like we did a great job with O-linemen just in the mid-late rounds, the Jari Evans and Bushrods and others.
But, yep.
Obviously you got to get back to that. And then, look, so much of it is quarterback play, right? And also... Guys making plays for you. Guys got to make plays for you at the receiver position, at the tight end position. And again, just what that does for everybody's confidence and just the momentum of the team, it's huge.
Now, Drew, before we let you run, when's your first assignment with Fox? Is it like it would seem like it wouldn't be this Sunday, but when is your first assignment?
Next week.
Okay, next week.
Next week. So it'll be Sunday, November 16th. Somewhere probably in the north, northeast. Obviously, Fox gets a lot of NFC. So a lot of NFC north, NFC east is what it seems like. But, man, I hope I get the Saints along the way here this year.
And Drew, if you get a Saints game, have you talked to Vilma? Because Vilma's had a few of those.
He gets Saints games all the time. I think he's like the NFC South representative, with all these games.
Drew, thanks so much for joining us. Again, congratulations on the new role with Fox Sports, and we'll certainly be all tuned in to watch you, brother.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
All right,
Drew. Alrighty. That was exclusive here on WWL, our quarterback-to-quarterback segment with Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, and Drew Brees. We'll be back to finish it off here in our number one of sports talk right after this break. Finishing up here in our number one of sports talk, when we return, the new president of LSU, Wade Roos, right after this news break. Welcome back to Sports Talk here on the Big 870 WWL. Mike Dottiglia along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. Steve Geller will join us at 5:45 for our triple option feature. But on our phone lines right now, the new president of LSU, Wade Roos. And Wade, thanks so much for joining us. You know, a lot of people know you from Golden Meadow. You got a degree from Nicholls State. You worked in Chicago for a long time, and then you were the McNeese State president. But most people on the Bayou know that you were Bubba Ogeron's favorite wide receiver at Sauk Lafouche.
I heard you were tough. I heard you were tough. Wait, I heard not only you're a good receiver, but I heard you weren't scared to block downfield, that you give up your body.
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah, that was a little bit. With the old saying that you didn't have any reason to worry about your body and let it all go, that was kind of the only thing I had it on the field. So, yeah, good times, good memories, good friendships that have lasted a lifetime. As all of you know, those old locker room relationships truly last a lifetime. And no matter, then you leave the state and you go spend 10 years in Chicago and get a doctorate and go up through the Federal Reserve, get a higher education, move to Arizona for another 6, 7, 8 years. And do everything in higher education, move up through the ranks of the organization from assistant professor to dean, and then come back home and be executive vice president and president of McNeese. Now, just the honor of my life to leave our flagship university to better educate Louisiana, to make a better Louisiana. It's just unbelievable. And I would argue that throughout all of that, throughout that entire journey, those old locker room relationships, if the phone rings tomorrow, you pick up the phone. If Bubba was to call me tomorrow, we'd still talk about Friday nights in being a Tarpon. So just great relationships, and so glad to be back in home in Louisiana and making an impact in higher education through our Flagstaff system.
Now, Wade, if you could explain to the listeners, you're McNeese president. But what are your responsibilities? You probably had, was it more on your plate? I don't know, at McNeese, or because I know you're sharing with the chancellor now, Jim Dalton. And I got another question about that in relationship there and that opportunity. But how would you compare what you did at McNeese to what now you're doing at LSU? Is it more universities involved with the LSU system or what?
Right. Yeah, at LSU, I mean, at McNeese, a regional institution really with a mission to develop the future workforce in a five parish area, and really went through a couple of tough hurricanes and some difficult times, put a strategic plan in place that focused a primary objective on getting the enrollment back and changing the decline in enrollment. Been very successful there. Did that through investing in an athletic program and specifically our basketball program to create some excitement. We developed some core competencies around community engagement, which is who we are in South Louisiana, and it really worked. In this LSU system, in my mind, this is the most impactful role in higher education, period. It was very important to me that if we were going to get this president's job, this was over the entire system, that we would be able to go back to the way we were structured some 10 years ago when we had a president and a chancellor at the A&M campus in Baton Rouge. So as the president over the LSU system, I'll have on the A&M campus, I'll have all of the external units, so external affairs, government affairs, athletics, the things that you think about facing externally will report directly to me as the president of the entire system. And then our what I like to call the research scholarship piece of the enterprise, the A&M campus, the two health science centers, one in Shreveport and one in New Orleans, the Pennington Research Group will report to our chancellor, who will then report up to me. So I'll have chancellors in Alexandria, I'll have a chancellors in Eunice, chancellor at the A&M campus, which will be that research enterprise I just mentioned. We're going to be absorbing UNO back into the LNU system, so LSU system, so that chancellor report as well. Just an honor of my life, Bobby, to be back home and have an impact to change the way we truly educate Louisiana. think about this system as meeting our students where they are, and given the opportunity for, no matter where you are in your career readiness to attend college, that we'll have an opportunity for you at somewhere throughout this system. And ultimately, why it matters because when we think about economic growth in Louisiana, there's two things that drive that, and that's the ability to attract capital and labor productivity. And labor productivity is driven by our higher education system. So to be over the entire system and have that kind of outreach throughout this entire state is really remarkable. One piece I forgot there is the Ag Center, which has 64. We have outreach offices or extensions in every parish throughout the state. That will also report through that unit. So just an incredible opportunity to come home and be a part of what I think is the most impactful position in education in our state.
Fans out there, and you know, they involved in everything in Louisiana, and they're hearing you say like A&M, you know, some of them like, well, why is he talking about A&M? It was because I had a pennant in my room. It was at LSU A&M, like agriculture and mechanical.
Right.
Is that correct? Right. Why you mentioned an A&M? Exactly. But not because when you say A&M, now everybody thinks you're talking about Texas.
No, it's definitely not Texas A&M we're talking about. Yes, that's exactly right. We're one of the land grant universities that were A&M universities back in the day. Long, strong history. So when you talk about A&M, you're talking about basically the Baton Rouge campus and the agricultural center and its the extension piece of it. So land grant university, rich history.
Gotcha.
Goes back right around the Civil War and being part of that. So when we talk about the A&M, we're talking about really the sort of the Baton Rouge campus. But when you think about the LSU system, a lot of people may not realize we've got we've got two health science centers, one in Shreveport, one in New Orleans. We've got a 4-year school in Alexandria that's doing really, really well. We've got a 4-year school in Shreveport, LSU Shreveport, doing really, really well. We've got a 2-year school, LSU Eunice in Eunice. Just a system that really has its tentacles throughout the entire state. So I'm definitely not talking about the Aggies when I'm talking about our A&M campus.
Yeah, and then, boy, you got more on your plate now, too, and that's in the process of changing. I still remember, I think it started in 58, LSUNO. They became UNO. So how do you think that's going? Because, boy, post-Katrina, boy, the enrollment's really been down.
Right. So today I was in New Orleans today. It's been wide open since we've announced this. I was in New Orleans today and had our big real committee meetings to talk about how we were going to bring UNO back into the LSU system. It's going to return back to be an LSUNO. But I think the wonderful part of that, it provides resources that we have throughout the system that will maybe allow them to create some efficiencies that they can lever to get better outcomes. I remember UNO in the late 80s and 90s, being 14,000-15,000 students pre-Katrina and being a very rigorous program, a wonderful university. I got a master's from the University of New Orleans. My first master's is from the University of New Orleans. So it's sort of near and dear to my heart. So to be there today and to really start thinking about a plan, how we're going to reintroduce UNO into the LSU system was personal to me. Because I got an MBA from the University of New Orleans, went on to Chicago, and never once did I feel like I didn't have the background or foundation to compete with anybody in the country. And so I just think it's a wonderful. We have to have a public university in New Orleans. It's going to probably take a little bit of restructuring, but we have to have a public university in New Orleans, and I think this is the right move. And we got to thank the legislators that gave us some support and some funds to make sure that we could do this the right way and to bring them back into the system. And Bobby, just for the record, we're going to the official sort of roll in is July 1st. So we got a little bit of time here to kind of make a plan, put it in place. But in July 1st, we truly expect to have UNO to be back into our LSU system. So then we'll have 9 campuses.
Wade, you understand, football's king in Louisiana. I mean, it's the top of the ladder here. Putting yourself on the committee, I think today, Bob and I talked about this, I think the president of a school today, especially the way the what's happening with everything in the ever-changing world of college athletics, the president has to be on that board to understand when you're going to make a change and make a decision on the new head coach at LSU, the impact of what LSU football does, and sort of paying the bills for most of the other sports, too. It brings in an unbelievable amount of money. So that's something else that you have to deal with very early. And also your relationship with Virg Ausberry, because Virg has been at LSU a long time. Looks as though that somewhere down the line, I think pretty quickly, there'll be a new agreement with Virg as the athletic director. So talk to us a little bit about the impact there, because I do think a president of a school today, I don't care what state, you got to be involved when you see the impact of what college football and also college athletics as a whole does to a school and to a state.
Absolutely. Make no mistake about it. We have a global brand at LSU, a global brand at LSU, and the driver or one of the main drivers of that brand happens on Saturday night at Tiger Stadium. Make no mistake about it. We're going to be an elite research institution with our new structure, but that global brand is assisted with what happens at Tiger Stadium on Saturday night. And presidents from around the country, the athletics, college athletics is in a very, very fluid, and I would argue somewhat of a disequilibrium, if you will. I serve as the chairman of the board of directors of the Southland Conference and sort of been on the cutting edge of rethinking what the SCORE Act from the federal legislation and all the things that's going on that's changing college athletics that's allowing us to try to put some parameters on NIL and some of the other rules that go along with that. So presidents, whether they want to be or not, have to be involved in athletics, not only from a monetary perspective, from a branding perspective, and ultimately in Louisiana, it's who we are. It's how we define and attract students, high-quality students from around the world, is what happens on Saturday night. So we take it very seriously. The athletic director reports directly to me, the president. I'm getting to know Virg very well. I just removed the interim tag off of his – he's the acting AD. I've been in some early conversations with him about 48 hours on this job. Virg bleeds purple and gold. He has my full authority to go find us a coach that I think for the best coaching job in America. We're going to go find the best fit for our coaching job in America. And I couldn't be more pleased to have Virg remove the interim title off of him.
Well, Wade, you know what I like what Virg said? And no, it's the truth. Now they have 12 teams in the playoffs. It's going to go to 16. LSU got to be in the playoffs every year. So I'm not even talking about you got to be in the hunt. I'm not somebody, okay, we got to win a championship. Yes, everybody wants to win a championship. But there's no reason, and Burge said this, that LSU should not be top 12. And if they go to 16 teams, hell yeah, you should be in the playoffs every year.
I agree. I think that's the goal, and that's what we need to focus on. And you look at the history here and winning national championships, I'm confident Virg, again, has my full authority to go and hire us a coach that will lead us to our next national championship. I think we have resources in place that allow us to do that every year, to your point, Bobby. And we're not going to settle for anything less than that.
Now, Wade, before we let you run, how would you compare Chancellor Jim Dalton, his role at LSU, his responsibilities, I should say, at LSU versus what he was doing at Alabama? Is it very similar or what?
No, he'll be stepping up. He was the provost at Alabama.
Okay.
Provost is sort of the chief academic officer. So he's coming over here, and he's going to be chancellor. He's going to actually be my executive vice president and chancellor of the A&M campus. And when I think about that, he's a great scholar. He's got a lot of scholarship behind him. And I think we compare so sort of complementary that, you know, he'll really focus on those research institutions, so the Baton Rouge campus and the medical schools and Pennington, like I mentioned earlier. And on the Baton Rouge campus, we'll both live there. And athletics, all the external stuff, will report directly to me. So if you think about our chancellor's really going to take care of the academic research side of the house in Baton Rouge and be my assistant throughout the entire system as my executive vice president. And I'll focus in the Baton Rouge campus on the external stuff. So government affairs, all the lobbying that goes along with how we tell our story at the state and federal level, all of the our external fundraising, our athletic piece, all of that will report directly to me so we can take that off the plate of the Baton Rouge Chancellor to really focus on the academic house. We want to be an elite university in Baton Rouge. We want it to be an academic elite university, and we want to think about our system and putting places and a structure where we have access to anybody that can be a part of LSU. So, you know, if you come out of high school, maybe like Bubba Ogeron, if he's listening, he might not have the best. I'm just joking about that. But if he had his GPA or his ACT score wouldn't have been great, you know, we have an opportunity. Maybe you go start at LSU and O, and then you transfer to an elite university. That's what the vision is. The vision is to change the way we educate Louisiana and to truly develop an elite university, get into top 50 in the university in our Baton Rouge campus, but also have access throughout this entire state and change the way we educate Louisiana.
Wade, you and I have talked about on the air and off the air about the because your kind of wheelhouse is the economics part of things. We see what's happening out in Calcasieu Parish, where the LNG kind of run is there now, where you have Woodland being able to invest $17.5 billion in that area. And I think for a lot of things, and I know you've heard it too, for a lot of people on the bayous, man, and in your cities, no matter where you are in Louisiana, I want to keep my grandkids and my kids home to have jobs. And I think to maybe open up also different areas that you can major in. And you did that at McNeese. But what's happening, I think, for people here, it's almost like Calcasieu Parish is like, you know, Siberia. They don't realize the economic impact that's happening there and is just starting to be there. But also that has to be a educated workforce, that you have to have people ready to take these jobs.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think you and I have talked about this, Mike, off the air. There's two variables that matter in any macroeconomic theory or model that you put out there that are statistically significant, and those are labor and capital. And again, that labor piece truly has to be there to get the capital here. You have to have both of them to grow GDP growth, and it has to be a true intentional model. What we've done at McNeese, I've had a wonderful team there, a wonderful community, lucky to be geographically located in that side of the world. But you think about the budget at McNeese, it's about $130 million. Our economic impact in the region's, you know, $700 million. When you think about the LSU system, you're talking about a $1.3 billion enterprise. So when you think about the economic impact to the state, once we do it right, you know, you're talking $5, $6, $7 billion. So it's enormous, enormous impact. But in order for that to continue to grow, we must be able to develop labor in an innovative fashion that allows us to keep attracting capital, having companies that want to move in, be anticipating what they may need and be leading and not reacting in developing that talent pool. And also, scholarships are very, very important. Scholarship and research, when you think about the model versus the McNeese model, very, very important. Scholarship and how we do research also has an economic impact as you go into, you know, we talk about coastal restoration. We send teams out there and doing impact. They're renting boats. They're doing all the things that go along with economic activity to continue to grow the economy. And also truly have an effect on students and postdocs that come to our school and put them down the right career path and hopefully keeping them in the great state of Louisiana. It's all about making a better Louisiana. That's where our focus is at, and we're determined to get there.
Wade, one of the things, and we hear about it a lot, of schools, you know, asking boosters or people that contribute to the program a lot of money. A lot of it is involved with athletics. Come on, we live it in the real world. Athletics is a big budget item, and sometimes you got to go to the goose that lays the golden egg, but you don't want to kill those geese that are laying the golden egg. From your standpoint, does that have to be something also involved on the academic part to get more people involved in maybe some projects on the school and in the LSU system that outside of the system to ask for money for, let's say it's a McNeese or a Nicholls State or a Southeastern or LSU to help grow the program at their respective schools. We hear so much about it because it's athletics involved, but the economic part, I think, also is something. For me, you're going to have to ask those same people to help you build a system to keep our kids and grandkids here in the state of Louisiana.
Actually, have wishes that you always want to honor. In McNeese, for example, we five X'd the amount of money we were at, not 5% and not 50%. We 5X'd it, the amount of money we were raising, and the vast majority of that was for academic size. And we went out into the corporate side and entered a vision. If you want labor force, kind of we needed, and she responded.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
You and LSU, I've been on the job like 48 hours and still haven't made it to bed. But the point is, I've been digging and digging. I think they have a very philanthropic group that is not necessarily athletics. We hear about the athletics. You get misquoted on the athletics all the time. But a lot of the research that comes in, and a lot of these philanthropic, unbelievable donors that love Louisiana State University are truly interested in the programs and the colleges that they graduated from and want to have an impact in terms of scholarship or professorships and chairs in terms of the colleges that they graduated from. So, Mike, although we hear it and because we love and we're passionate about our athletic programs, there is a lot of philanthropic activity revolving around the academic side of the house, and that needs to continue, and it's going to be one of our focuses moving forward.
Last question for you, Wade, because a lot of people, when is LSU going to get the new head coach? So sort of give a time frame, and I think I've heard, or maybe you were quoted as saying, or maybe it was Verge, that it doesn't matter if we have a coach that we've kind of targeted, we could wait until after the playoff system. There is some dynamics there that won't quite a jive because of the early signing period and everything else. So for people asking, when could we expect maybe a new coach at LSU for football, kind of give your comments on that, because if it's a guy in the playoff system, you may have to wait a while.
Right, they may have some uncertainty there. That's exactly right. But I will tell you this. I have the complete confidence in our AD that we're going to go hire the best coach for the best fit for the best program in America. And I can't say that enough. I have the utmost confidence that we have an AD that's going to go find us a coach for the best job in America. In terms of timing, who knows? It depends on how the – how all that plays out to sort of how your question was phrased there. Depends on timing of the season, so on and so forth. But one thing is for sure, we are focused on getting the best coach for the best program in America.
Well, I'm putting my two cents in. Y'all gotta call Jeff Brohm. I don't know. He's one of like 10 guys probably y'all talking to, but I know he knows what he's talking about. I think he's an NFL coach at Louisville. Now, he bleeds Louisville, but you can talk. You got to make that phone call. All I know is I always look at like Coach O. What do you do, like top 10 ranked opponents? What do you do against ranked opponents? And that's one thing Coach Kelly didn't do. Well, four wins against AP top five teams, that's what he is worth considering what Jeff Brohm has done. I'm telling you, I don't know if he'll get the job, but y'all got to call him at least.
I hear you. I'm going to take the fifth on that, KJ Cannon. I'm going to take the fifth on that. And I'm going to repeat what I said earlier. I have an AD that I got full faith in. Is going to go find the coach. It's going to be the best coach for the best program in America. And I'm going to take the fifth on that if that's okay.
Yeah, that's okay.
Wade, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Man, enjoyed our time together. And wish you the best of luck. And, man, being on the bayou, that's got to be an unbelievable experience growing up in Golden Meadow and to see where you're at today. Man, couldn't be more proud of you.
So blessed with the opportunities that Bayou Lafourche and the foundation and our culture gave us this idea that there's no substitute for work ethic, right? You go get it done and make no excuses and continue to set goals and go get them. So blessed to be in this opportunity and the way I was raised, I never ran from it. I ran towards it. I'm proud of it. I never hide from my accent. And I'm just blessed every day to be on top of LSU. And I leave you with one thing. Go Tigers.
That's it. Go Tigers.
Okay, wait. You ain't got no accent. Bobby and I, we got an accent. You ain't got no accent,
well,
bro.
We don't have no accent compared to Jeff Landry, though, Governor Landry.
Right. Hey, when I was at the Federal Reserve, it was in 2008, and the world was kind of ending, and we're giving all of these technical presentations on economics and how we were unfreezing. The first question would be with investment bankers. Everybody's in the crowd, and I'd stay up all night trying to prepare my talk to where it'd be perfect and technical. And the first question from the crowd was always, "Where are you from?" And I said, I'd say Chicago. I'm from the Chicago Federal Reserve Bank. And they'd say, no, where are you from? I'd say, Golden Meadow. They'd say, what? How in the heck does a guy from Golden Meadow get to the Federal Reserve? But so they thought,
hey, only in America.
That's it, baby.
Hey, that's what's great about capitalism in America.
Like Coach always say, you got to fight like hell every day, and we know all about it.
Yeah, great opportunities. No greater country.
Wade, thanks so much. And again, congratulations, buddy. Thank you.
All right, Wade.
All righty.
That was the new president of LSU, Wade Roos, and you heard him make the comment that basically AD, Virge Ausberry, he's got autonomy. He can do what he wants to hire the head coach and bring it out to the board to get that done. And, Bob, I do think they go on big game hunting. I think they're going to go big game hunting. They talked about how Scott Woodward did. I think Verge is going to do the exact same thing.
I'm going to tell you what, LSU fans, everybody wants to be associated with a winner, and they don't mind investing their money. The bottom line, I'm not asking too much. But you got to win. No, not winning record. You got to go to the playoffs. There's no reason the brand of LSU shouldn't be in the top 12 every year. And then they're going to expand it to 16 going to the postseason. No, I don't care who's the coach. You got to make the playoffs every year, and that's not asking too much. Now, maybe once a decade,
you'll have a transition year,
or once every 5 years. We want to, because you get spoiled. The 21st century, three different coaches. No other university has done that, winning a national championship. Look at Saban. Look at Les Miles. Coach O. Look at Bebe. Three national champions. Three different coaches. No, nobody can say that when you look at that. So, but they have to be in the hunt. I don't care who's the
coach. And you're out of it. You're not in it right now.
No, this season we still have a lot of games left. Look how irrelevant the Alabama game is. What I mean by irrelevant, shame. If we head in the right direction, LSU's like a 9.5-point underdog. Well, that should be like a pick'em game or a field goal, not 9.5 points.
We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870 WWL right after this break. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL, Mike DeTay along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. If you live or work in Vacherie, come meet Saints legend Deuce McAllister and Mike Haas Friday at First American Bank and Trust headquarters. They'll be there for a special edition of Fans in the Pro live from doing a Veterans and Military Families Month celebration at First American Bank. Come out and honor our nation's heroes with Deuce and Hoss in beautiful downtown Vacherie, Louisiana at First American Bank and Trust. That's 28 27-85, Louisiana 20, Friday, 4-6, right here on the Big 870 WWL. We'll be back with more Sports Talk right after this break. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL, Mike Dettay along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, Steve Geller. It's our triple option feature. Cannon, you've been waiting for this for a while. So I've been waiting
because I want something positive amongst our sports teams here. And Steve, I gave you another little hint, and it's kind of a little music background. Bobby, what the hell are you talking about? Okay, I'm going to tell you. The new look UNO men's basketball team. Opening season on the road against the Big 12 foe TCU, the Horned Frogs. And guess what? They delivered a 78-74 upset on Monday night in Fort Worth, Texas. The win was UNO's first against a power conference opponent since 2016, almost a decade, and marked TCU's first non-conference home loss since 2022. Now, UNO opened the 25-26 season. They were 1-0. Now, this will call my attention. You know how, whether it's FanDuel, DraftKings, whoever it is, BetMGM, whatever, UNO was a 21.5-point underdog.
Cha-ching.
And this is what DraftKings had them at. At the tip-off, they were 21.5-point underdog, and UNO won by 4 points. What even makes it more interesting, that UNO's win over TCU with a roster made up of 13 new players. Well, guess who's their president of basketball operations?
Master P.
Master P, Percy Miller, Master P. So Master P said, we got to have a winning team. That is, listen, 21.5-point underdog, and you come away with a 4-point win. So props go out to UNO men's basketball.
Hopefully they snap the Louisiana curse we've got going right now.
Well, who are we cursing?
I'm just saying the Saints, LSU, the Pelicans.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, now that'll be here before you know it. Friday night, Tulane, Memphis. And
you
Memphis,
know it.
No, that and
Tulane, Monday, UNO plays LSU.
Yeah, that'll be. Oh, boy, LSU better not lose to UNO. Like, can you imagine? Because it'd be like in the future, like LSU and O beating LSU. You can't be a directional school and then beat the...
Nichols beat them a few years
ago. Well, no, it didn't happen. That's not the same thing, though. That would be like what happened in baseball when they beat them in the regular season, the postseason, when University of Texas, like San Antonio beat University of Texas. When you're the flagship, that can't happen. That'd be like LSU-ish. Remember in baseball, they went undefeated? And look, they both got to go to the White House because they both won a national championship. But yeah, we need some love like this. You know, so, the Pelicans got their first win. So, but again, I said like.
Right, thank UNO. They snapped the curse.
Yeah, they snapped the curse. And yeah, so. But here come the wins.
So I text Coach Styler last night, Boog, at Nicholls State. I say, it's up to you now. You got to beat Kentucky.
Oh, no, they played them hard, though.
They did play them hard.
I think they lost maybe high 10, like 18. They didn't get blown out by like 30 points. No, they hung in there. But
and they got paid to go play.
The Pelicans, come on. You have to beat the Hornets. I mean, what is that even saying? I mean, like, we lost to the Hornets? Or be like losing to the Wizards? No, wait, come on. At least they won. It's an NBA game.
Yeah.
But you had to win it. I mean, when you're getting blown out by 30-some points and all, that was, come on.
That kind of spills into my triple option, guys. I was talking about basketball, too. It's funny that Cajun Cannon brings that up. But with the Pelicans going for win number two tonight now at Dallas, the Mavericks are a hurting squad right now. So it doesn't mean you can't take advantage of that for a second straight night. Let's see that fight again from this team. And then we're going to have over on 1350 AM, 92.9 FM on the Bet New Orleans. LSU men's basketball season tipping off against Tarleton State.
There's a little bit of pressure on Coach McMahon.
For Coach McMahon. And all I got to say is, let's make the dance, gentlemen. That's it.
Yeah, it's like, come on. Beat a Cinderella story to SEC. I want to say, what did they, preseason pick one before last? So I don't know.
Even John Brady talked about it yesterday. Man, it's about talent. Look at the talent on that team. They don't match up against the top teams in the SEC basketball-wise.
You know what? You know who I'm cheering for, and I don't have a dog in the hunt, and I don't like the Wolfpack. I'm cheering for North Carolina State and Will Wade. What he did at McNeese and went to the postseason, no. Hello. LSU's basketball, come on. That's you got to go to the dance.
What's one of the saddest things, how that all turned out, just because the guy, the personality was perfect for LSU, and we had him here.
Well, he was breaking the rules when you couldn't break the rules. Because what he was doing now,
it's all legal now.
Well, Will Wade, though, he shouldn't have. You can't.
Because he was a pirate. Was the pirate.
You can't be recorded.
No, you can't get yourself taped.
No, you can't. Yeah, you never know.
You know, something like out of Goodfellas there.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it was close to it. Yeah. Real close to it.
But I don't know Bruce Pearl and all. They're all involved. That's another topic.
You think about Bruce Pearl stepping away and his son taking over. Bob and Bethune-Cookman?
They won an overtime to Bethune-Cookman. You notice how they pronounce the TH? I said Bethune instead of Bethune Cookman. Yeah. Come on. That's a directional school. No, Harbin, that's a little nepotism there. I don't know if the son.
He better win win big.
And the son was the defensive coach, but they gave up 90 points to Bethune Cookman.
Yeah. That's a lot of points. We'll be back with Ended Up Here on our number two of Sports Talk right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Finishing up here in hour number two of Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL, want to thank the new president of LSU, Wade Roos, for joining us. About a half an hour he spent with us, and so we appreciate President Roos for joining us here on Sports Talk on the Big 870. Steve, what you got cranked up in the 6 o'clock hour?
Going to be talking more Saints. Going to bring in sideline reporter Jeff Nowak, who is out of practice today. Give us an update as the Black and Gold get ready for another road trip. This time, a NFC South opponent, Carolina.
And then Pelicans pregame at 7 o'clock.
Indeed.
Tip-off at 7:30. Pels Mavs right here on the Big 870 WWL. We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 WWL right after this news break.
Welcome on in, folks. Second half of Sports Talk about to kick off. Steve Geller along with Bobby Hebert, Andrew Pearson, running master control, as we got another hour of Sports Talk before we hand things over to the Pelicans radio network. The Birds back in action this evening in Dallas. So day two of a back-to-back. They were home last night, got their first victory. Now they're on the road. At least I guess you could. It's a short trip to Dallas, so not bad. That bad of a back-to-back for them.
Yeah, but the perception, just think, well, the Mavericks will turn around and, get going. I'm having a brain fart. Who's the stud player? He's only 18 years old. That he has it.
Cooper Flagg.
I was like, Cooper Flagg, but it's like, people are like, oh, he's not all that. He ain't done nothing. Relax.
Relax, guy.
Cooper Flagg, I mean, people don't realize that 18 years old. And so,
everyone wants it to be immediate.
Then I think he'll be fine. Even Kevin Durant, I think, was commenting.
Hopefully he just doesn't have a breakout game against the Pelicans tonight.
Well, he might. I don't know. But even, they were even asking Kevin Durant about him. He goes, don't worry about him. He'll be just fine and stuff. So,
but they're without Anthony Davis and a number of other guys. Like we know, Kyrie Irving still isn't playing for them either.
Yeah, what's up with Anthony Davis? Is he like?
I think it's a calf injury. The latest with him.
Oh, calf, and then what's the latest with Zion? Oh, my ham,
hamstring,
my ham. We gonna monitor it for the next 10 days or something? What? I mean. I don't know. I'm not going to say
I was hopeful, too, this year, Bobby. Yeah, yeah. Seeing him much slimmer, leaner, meaner, and it just hasn't started out that way with him having more success of being able to stay on the court.
Well, now, the latest talk more is like with Willie Green is, how long does he last? I think that was a big win for him, as much as the team, him as the individual coach, them beating the Hornets. As anyone.
Yeah, you wanted to see that fight from a team. Like, we don't care what's happening or who we're playing. And, yes, it was the Hornets. But they really went down to the wire there, fought to the end, and achieved that victory. Everybody, I believed, that was a team effort last night.
Yeah, well, you got to get the players to respond, no matter who's available. And, a lot of times his lineup changes, and when he plays players is always questioned, especially when you don't win. So, we say, well, who's on the hot seat? Yes, I'd say he's on the hot seat, maybe even a little more right now because LSU really hasn't played like Coach McMahon.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters: your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Both men's basketball programs, I'd say LSU and the Pelicans, definitely. Come on, you got to do something, or they'll get someone else.
And yeah, over on our sister station, the Bet 92.9 FM and 1350 AM, 7 p.m., we'll have the start of the LSU men's basketball season. Like I mentioned in Triple Option, Bobby, I'm not asking you to win SEC championships. I'm not asking you to, cut down the nets in the Final Four or even make the Final Four. Just make the big dance. Just make it to the postseason.
Yeah, just make it to the postseason. I think it would be a great accomplishment if that does happen because, LSU's football program had expectations this year.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, oh, yeah, especially after the Clemson game.
Got to be a top 12 team.
But, yeah, no, we were thinking, after we beat Clemson, top four. What the hell, yeah. Well, we're going to get a bye. We'd be in the top four and get a bye. Well, no one has those expectations for LSU's men's basketball. Now, Coach Mulkey and the women's program, yes.
Different story.
Yes, there's expectations there because they got the skins on the wall. So,
looking at this LSU basketball team, so much has been made with McMahon of getting into a tough situation when he first came to the program. But like I mentioned, this is now the fourth year. You've established things in this program, and I know they finally got some of that NIL money to help them out.
Did they pay the right players?
Yeah, exactly.
When you look at the rosters, because you can go if in basketball, it's not like you have to. Oh, we need a number of players. You have one or two like studs. I mean, basketball that can make all the difference in the world. Where you're going from the outhouse to the penthouse. So it'd be interesting to see if you paid the right players, the program, because.
That's crazy to say nowadays, though, but that's the facts.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and you have an eye for talent, and then who you're rewarding, and then ultimately they produce, and then you can point, well, that's the reason why they're winning. Look at ACAT. And why you have hope, let's say, the NBA team. Why does they hit the lottery again? Why does the future of San Antonio Spurs, small market team, San Antonio, why? Because of Wemby. And look how he's developing. And how young he is. And it was like, I remember when they, but we were fortunate and didn't work out. Look where we pick it. Everyone's all excited. We got Anthony Davis. It didn't quite work out.
Right.
And then we got Zion. I don't know what's going to happen with that. He's had a big enough sample size. But then you just look at when San Antonio was winning. People say, the Spurs, they were born. What? They won championships with David Robinson. Tony Parker on the Admiral. I mean, I would take boring basketball in New Orleans if we're winning.
You're right, though. You mentioned with the Admiral, David Robinson, and Tim Duncan, those kind of players, they weren't flashy at all.
No, Tim Duncan, he'd do his bank shot. He'd be like that mid-range bank shot off the backboard and stuff. I don't know. And just probably wanted to – he's in a conversation. Is he the greatest power forward in NBA history?
I'm sure you put that out there in our talking text line, 504-260-1870. You'll sound off.
Yeah, and then could say, no, Bobby, he wasn't flashy enough and all, but I know he was the most consistent.
Yeah, when you
ask Popovich about it, I wonder what Popovich would say about that.
Definitely when you're constructing one of those all-time teams, I got to feel like Timmy Duncan's in there.
Yeah, well, you could say like a dream team. If you're not going to put him in the top five, he's on the roster, right?
I would hope so.
When you look at that. But right now, if we had a dream team in America, they wouldn't beat the world. The best players in professional basketball right now, they're not from the United States. Did I talk to you about that? I'm going off on a tangent. Think about you name all these top players. Oh, Bobby, what about SGA, Oklahoma Thunder. No, he's from North America, but not United States. He's like a Toronto Blue Jay. He's from Canada. So you look at SGA. So you look at, you could go five, six, seven deep, and it's like, man, that's all people that aren't from the United States. So you show how they develop more fundamentally sound world basketball than AAU. Now, you have the individual talent. You know, we're more worried about, oh, did you cross them over? Or, boy, did you see that dunk? You know, human highlight instead of, like, fundamental basketball. And I think you can even say that, just look at the World Series. You look at the top players, Major League Baseball. Now, this has been a process. I don't know, they're from Dominican Republic or Japan. Now, look at Paul Skeens. He's an American.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it just shows you. Now, I don't think the NFL, that will ever come about. The NFL football, National Football League, the best players will always be from the United States. You might have sprinkled in a few from Africa, a few from Eastern Europe, Germany. You know, the international program, now with the kickers. Look, all the damn punters from Australia. But it's not going to be they're going to take over the game.
It'd be interesting. Is there an Ohtani of football somewhere in Japan?
Yeah, well, I'd be interested to see what kind of league, American Football League.
Right.
Like, we'll never compete on the world stage in soccer. I don't care. We host in the World Cup, and it's very entertaining to be in that kind of festive atmosphere. We'll never compete with the world. Argentina, Brazil, or you look Italy, France, Germany, whatever. You just look Spain. You can go on and on. United States never will. You know why? Because the best athletes in the United States, none of them are playing soccer. They're not. I always would wanted to say, now, this is a fantasy thing. What if, like, you look at, like, the fastest and the most athletic, like LeBron James. I think LeBron James would be an awesome goalie. You know, mm-hmm. He's so big maybe to run around. But what if you had the best athletes didn't do anything, but they had to play soccer? Like when Bo Jackson, Michael Jordan, whoever you view as, like, whoa, like Steve Nash, you know, from Canada, twice won the MVP in NBA basketball. He's an awesome soccer player, Herb. But what if he just played soccer? So I'm saying if you had the best Americans and all they could play is soccer, then I think we could win a World Cup.
Those soccer players make pretty good money.
Yeah, well, and even if you have, because there's no, even to have the MSL, even the best players in America, if they're good, they go to Premier League in England, or the Bundesliga, they go overseas. No, so we appreciate the world sport, and they call it football, but American football is hard to beat. I don't think soccer will never overtake American football. I don't care if the world likes soccer or football. That it'll never overcome. I think I said this before, and this is the greatest World Series or one of them that I've ever witnessed.
Mm-hmm.
I was so intrigued with the Major League playoffs and the World Series because there's too many games during the season. But
we basically got an 8-game World Series.
Yes, and then you had 2-for-1. One game went 18 innings.
Right.
No, it was truly unbelievable. But how I think when television came about and the product – baseball versus football, I'm talking about American football, is that Howie Long said this. I remember this. That, yeah, baseball was America's pastime. You know, like, okay, baseball's king, but then football's America's passion, American football. So football just look at the ratings. And, you know, they had international ratings for the World Series. Look at all the Japanese watching, all the Canadians. Half of the Canadian population was watching the World Series.
Taking a break here on Sports Talk, folks. When we get back, we'll be talking American football. Saints sideline reporter Jeff Nowak will join us with a practice update right after this on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk, folks. Football fans, join me and Mike Dettillier for Weekend Kickoff, a special edition tomorrow live at the Treasure Chest Casino. Come hang out, enjoy some grub and gambling, get amped up for the Saints' battle with the Panthers, and also LSU's bout against Bama and Tuscaloosa. Then we got Thursday Night Football, Raiders-Broncos. Meet up with me and Mike D. Treasure Chest Casino tomorrow by the Game Bar and Grill, 4 to 7 p.m. on WWL. Getting ready for that Saints-Carolina Panthers matchup, NFC South bout for the black and gold. Helping us break down today's practice and all things Saints, sideline reporter Jeff Nowak. What's been up, Jeff? How's it going out there?
You know, living the dream. It's dark already, and I'm not a fan of that. But otherwise, you know, same old, same old. We're doing it.
Now, Jeff, the question I have for you, you think we're going to finally give Vilay some targets? I mean, yeah. We all know Chris Olave. I mean, he has to, right? I mean, come on. He has to be a big part of what we're trying to do offensively. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Yeah, one of the reasons I haven't been super critical of the usage to this point for Vilay is you had to play Rashid, right? You had to. Yeah. Whether you felt like it was the optimal setup, he was your wide receiver too. He was here all through camp. Like, he's the guy that you built everything around. And whether it was working or not, I don't think it was working particularly well. I think the offensive results speak for themselves. But, you know, he was just kind of jamming up the works. And the wide receiver room has been remarkably healthy. There wasn't a single player that missed a game in that group. And, you know, I do think that one of the reasons you trade Shaheed is because, yes, you do see a much bigger role for Devon Vilay. He's 6'5". He does a lot of the things that you need that kind of isolation receiver to do for you. If you go back, the touchdown that Tyler Shuck threw in the game against the Rams, that was a play designed to go to Devon Vilay. You motion Chris Olave to the other side so you get kind of a 3-by-1. He's by himself. You expect that they're going to send coverage with Olave, and he's going to get one-on-one, and you can kind of just throw it up to him. He's 6'5". He can go get it. The Rams didn't do that. The Rams had a safety kind of sit over the top, and they doubled Vilay, so Shuck is able to work back to the other side. Chris Olave gets doubled, and that leaves Juwan Johnson wide open. And, you know, so it's not a question of, hey, are they dialing stuff up for him? I think they were dialing stuff up for him in the red zone. I think without Shaheed, you're just going to have more opportunity to get him the ball throughout the game as opposed to kind of these select packages. But no, I like Blay. I think he has a skill set that they can take advantage of. And the trio of, even if you had traded Brandon Cooks, like, I just think the trio of Olave, Shaheed, Cooks, and then Vilay just didn't compute. Like, whether you trade Cooks or Shaheed, removing one of them from the equation and putting Vilay in there just makes more sense, because you need a guy who can be kind of that isolation player. And now that also allows you to take advantage of Olave's downfield ability more often. And frankly, I think Olave this season has been a better downfield receiver than Shaheed had been. Like, I think we're all kind of enamored with the idea of Rashid Shaheed and what we had seen from him. The fact is, he had two catches all season of 30 or more yards. Able to incorporate him in the way they needed. And this just makes a lot more sense. So to answer your question, yes, I do think that pretty quickly we're going to see Devon Vilay make a much bigger impact.
Now, Jeff, speaking of Shaheed, I think whether the quarterback a lot of times does determine. I think Derek Carr could throw the long ball, and I thought this was interesting. I think this is more not so much on Kellen Moore. Now, some you might disagree with this, or people might in general, but Shaheed's average per catch was 11.3 yards. That's more than 5 yards below his career average coming into the season. I think it's more the quarterback on that. That's just my opinion. Watch what he does in Seattle. I think with Clint Kubiak, he's going to be awesome. Opposite JSN. I just think. And it's, you know, sometimes it's the right fit. So when I look at Rashid Shaheed, and I said, well, they're not going to pay two receivers. You know, and I think they're going to pay Chris Olave. They're not, and obviously not paying Rashid, and that would have been the case. But the question I have for you, and you can come in on all what I just said, but do you think, because we were saying, oh, can we get a third-round draft pick for Shaheed, and we end up getting a fourth- and fifth-round pick? How does that compare when you break it all down? Okay, one-third or fourth and fifth? How the value there? How would you compare that?
Yeah, and to be clear, I'm not saying Rashid Shaheed can't play. I just don't think the combination was working in the scheme as we saw it.
Right.
You know, and yeah, I think Derek Carr and Rashid had a great connection in terms of Derek. One of the things he did probably better than anyone in the NFL at this point is throw that deep ball, and deep passing is kind of the dinosaur of the NFL. It doesn't really happen anymore. Sam Darnold is a player that throws a really good deep ball, so it just made a lot of sense. Clint Kubiak's obviously familiar with him. As far as, you'd prefer another day two pick. I think when I look at the picks the Saints have in their kind of holster now, and I'm considering that comp pick currently, which is a fourth round pick that they could theoretically lose if they play Ike Yiadom
for Adebo, right?
On the defense. But yeah, it would be for Adebo. I mean, I think what you had to get back was at minimum what you sent out to bring in Vilay. Like, I don't think you were going to trade him for less than a fourth round pick. I do kind of view it as, you know, you're probably losing ground with the fourth round picks. So you sent out your fourth, you brought back Seattle's fourth. But I think when you're in day three, it's more important to have picks than necessarily where they are. Because, you know, the idea that, oh, well, if I pick at the first in the fourth round, I'm definitely going to get a better player than I pick 100 or 25th in the fourth round, right? Like, everyone's boards are so different by that stage. It's more about just having the ability to pick the player you want. And remember, the Saints traded up to the top pick of the fourth round a few years back, and they ended up with Nick Saldiveri, who hasn't exactly, you know, blown the doors off anybody. So, you know, I do think that they got back what they needed. You would love it for it to be more, but the fact that whatever team traded for him was going to need to sign this guy to a contract or make him an 8-month rental or a 3-month rental, whatever it's going to be, that knocks it down. And at the end of the day, they did need to get something. And if your options were, I'm going to hold out for a third and maybe get nothing and then settle for a comp pick 2 years from now or get a fourth and a fifth, I think that is by far the better option than to just play the odds. And when you look at what the Jaguars traded for Jacoby Myers, they gave up a fourth and a sixth. So once that price point got set, I think that kind of told you where the Saints were going to go. And the fact that they got better than that for Shahid, I think it's a win. I mean, you don't want to trade players. Like I wish they could have found a way to make that Olave Shahid tandem work. I just don't think it ever really did this year. So the fact that they were able to get back assets that they can build with is a win, in my opinion.
Now, Jeff, you mentioned Saldiveri, and you look, the Saints made several moves prior to the season to address the offensive line and the depth on that offensive line. Luke Fortner, Asim Richards in August trades, and then also veteran offensive lineman Dylan Radins. Mm-hmm. Who started the first two games in Penning's place. So I would think that Radins is starting against Carolina at left guard. Is that correct?
Yeah, he's going to be the starter. That's a trade that I didn't expect, not in the sense that they were kind of in on Penning, but just, you know, I didn't know if anyone was going to be calling after him. They ended up getting back a 2027 sixth rounder. And, you know, Penning, I think it was cool to see him make that transition to really be into it. I thought he played okay. Well, I don't think he was doing anything that kind of blew your mind to the point they're like, oh, they're
except for his holding penalties, Jeff. I mean,
there were mistakes. There were issues. I mean, it was going fine. I wouldn't say it was going great. You do have Radins there. You have Simpkins as kind of a young developing player at guard, and you have Cesar Ruiz. So that was just kind of I'll take something for a guy who's probably not going to be here. And at the end of the day, the trade itself was just, you know, kind of disappointing in the sense that he's a first round pick from 4 years ago. And now you're talking about a sixth round pick 2 years from now. That's just as good of an example of any is the reason this roster is where it is because the Saints have not been effective at bringing in quality players on day one and two of the draft frequently enough. But no, Radins, I think they'll be fine with Radins for the time being. But this offseason, when you're going into the draft and you're looking, I think you're going to have to continue to scout interior offensive line prospects. And that's both center and guard because we just don't know. I mean, once you get to the point where you have back-to-back season-ending injuries, I think the center position and Eric McCoy starts to become a long-term question that you might have to figure out. So it's going to be an interesting position to watch. The good news is they have the tackles that they have the future, so that's a much more difficult position to handle.
You know, Jeff, and you know, Saints fans say, like, well, we got this draft capital on that, but we still got to draft the right players. I'm sure the Jets, the Jets fans are saying the same thing. Oh, it still depends who you pick, but I'm just looking at what New Orleans drafted 5 players in the first round from 2018 to 22, and 3 of them, Trevor Penning being one of them, then defensive ends Marcus Davenport and Peyton Turner, didn't even get second contracts with the Saints. And so I'm looking at their fourth draft pick first round, receiver Chris Olave. I think they're going to pay him. So, but I mean, that's where you can't miss. Your bottom line is your first rounders have to play like, oh, yeah, they're a first round player. And not like, oh, well, they're a player in the NFL, but, you know, they can't, in other words, be drafted in the first round and would look like a bargain if we had them in the fifth or sixth round.
Yeah, right. And you look at the first round draft pick since 2018, right? Obviously, the 2017 draft pick, the draft class is kind of legendary, but like, yep. You know, the success stories are Chris Olave and Brian and Cesar Ruiz, right? Like that's the top end, you know?
Right.
And obviously the last few years you landed a few offensive tackles that you feel like are really talented players, and that's great to build around. But, you know, that's just way too many missed opportunities to even and if you had brought in other players of the level of a Cesar Ruiz, even, which I know Cesar gets a lot of criticism, but you're talking about like a Peyton Turner who's not even on the roster anymore. Right. Marcus Davenport is not on the roster anymore. Like, and not because, you know, they got signed for big money elsewhere, because you just like, all right, let's move on. And then there's Isaiah Foskey, who didn't even get to the end of his rookie deal. Like, there's just, especially with those big bodies, you just can't miss that often.
I agree.
Because you just become so talent barren. And they've had some decent picks in the mid rounds, but that's, you can't make up for that. Like, you have to be able to hit on those early picks. So hopefully they figure that out. Because at the end of the day, like, we can talk about fixing the salary cap, and I know that's just a buzz topic that everyone wants to talk about. The salary cap is not the reason this team is struggling. This team is struggling because they haven't drafted enough quality players.
Amen. I agree, Jeff.
Jeff, always great stuff, man. Appreciate you. The practice report from today, I know, is up online. What else can folks check out at WWL.com?
Yeah, we'll have a podcast breaking down the injury report, talking about the trade deadline. Shortly, also, definitely check out, we had an exclusive interview with Tyler Shuck, the rookie quarterback. Mike Haas did that. A lot of really interesting comments in there from him. And, you know, obviously, y'all chatted with Breeze today, so we'll have something on that pretty shortly. Big news for the Drew man, Fox. You know, a weird situation that he's taken over for, but good for him.
Yep.
Drew. Yeah. Jeff, I'll talk to you tomorrow morning on the Inside Black and Gold podcast, man. Take care.
All right, y'all. Have a good one.
All right, Jeff.
Jeff Nowak, St. Sideline reporter, also a WWL digital content producer, joining us there. Check out his stuff at WWL.com if you want to keep up with the Black and Gold. What we're going to do, keep up with our breaks. Take them one and be right back after this on WWL. Rocking and rolling here on Sports Talk, our Wednesday, November 5th edition, as we get ready for Pelicans basketball coming up at 7 p.m. Pregame coverage at Dallas, 7:30 tip-off against the Mavs, 105.3 FM, 870 AM. Want to hit into our talk and text line right now, Cajun Cannon. Folks are sounding off, 504-260-1870. Jimmy and Gretna, you are up on the line first, man. What's going on, Jimmy?
Hey, two things, because I know once Bobby takes the mic, it's over. It's a runaway crazy train, like Ozzy Osbourne said. Two things. Congratulations to Master P, Bobby. You and me have drank a beer at a UNO basketball game. I know your son was an assistant, and we were some of the only people in there showing support. But Master P and UNO went to Fort Worth and beat TCU the other night on Monday night, a 22-point underdog. And even whether you're spiritual
that was
Christian
awesome.
Or not, it was awesome. And look, and what's crazy is, Bobby and Steve, is he went in there and he had a Bible and he had a slingshot. And he said, hey, David and Goliath, we're not going to get all of them, but we're going to get somebody. They got to play at LSU next Monday night. They're playing at Tulane. Master P is going to save UNO basketball. And I want to parlay that into the Pelicans. All right. I know there's lots of talk. We know there's not much support. You know I'm a big fan of the Pelicans because they need the support. Mm-hmm. I went to the game last night, guys. Young guys stepped up. Carlo Mackovich dumped on like four guys. Derek Queen stepped up at the end. And I think they're going to get extensive playing time tonight. Look, we're probably not going to make the playoffs. All right? And look, Loomis is probably going to be around for a while. And Gail Benson, of course, she's not going anywhere. The Saints are never going to leave the city. But I will say this to the fans. Last night, the upper deck was empty. The fans that were there were making a lot of noise, and we won that game. I'll put it to you like this, guys. If you tarped off the top mm-hmm. of most Pelicans home games this year, you probably wouldn't suffocate one person, all right? And that's sad because the concession stands are empty. This city is going to have to go out of their way. I know I'm preaching to the choir. Bobby's about to take the mic on this. We have to keep the NBA in New Orleans because
I agree.
Seattle, Kansas City, and Las Vegas are chomping at the bit of Gail Benson and this Loomis debacle.
That's a true
Zion's
statement.
Hurt. I get it.
That's
and you
a
know
true
what?
Statement.
And that's a true statement. Zion's hurt. I don't care if we trade him or keep him. I don't care. But we need to show support. And like Brandon Ingram said when he left to Toronto, he said the home games were empty when I played for the Pelicans. And we have a reputation right now for being a city that's not an NBA team.
Yes, but I mean, Jimmy, so that's what I'm saying.
Supporting team.
Jimmy.
So I want to get your take on that, Bobby.
Well, no, listen. I'm going to ask you. Listen, I understand what you're saying. But do you think people, now they have diehard basketball fans, but that's in the minority. Do you think people really care if we didn't have an NBA team? Now, because we lost the Jazz. Now, I like NBA basketball. I like basketball. But there's a lot of fans. We get texts all the time. Why y'all talking about basketball? It's football season. Or now, the Saints, that's a different story. No, we have to support the Saints. Now, you could maybe you buy a season ticket, you protest, I'm not going to the game.
There's pride in having two professional teams in the city, I feel
yes,
like.
Yes, to me, population-wise, we are small. I always say this, big town, small city. But you consider it a major city when you have an NFL and NBA franchise. And I can tell you this, that's why the one thing with the Saints, that you don't have an NFL team, no more Super Bowls. And the economic impact there with a Super Bowl. Now, we might not be in the rotation, you know, as much as we would like. But, yeah, the Pelicans, I don't know. You know, Jimmy, I know you're going to support the Pelicans, but is there enough people like you to want to be in that number?
And it's hard to really be critical of folks when the team is struggling so much. Like, what are you going to support right now?
No, I tell you what, the Pelicans. It was the Hornets at the time, ironically. Uh-huh. We just talked about the Hornets. Because I remember that, it seems like that was so long ago now, when they had the Crescent City connection.
Sure.
Chris Paul and Tyson Chandler, David West.
Exciting times.
No, the arena was packed, and it was rocking. But you got to win in basketball. I think you got to win ultimately now in football, too, because once you win a championship and you had a Drew Brees, Sean
Payton. You get spurled.
Yeah, you get spurled, like a Drew Brees, Sean Payton era. You got to, it's going to be five straight seasons we're not in the playoffs. NFL, unacceptable.
Yeah, that's not acceptable, right?
Right.
Agreed.
But then we talk about winning Super Bowls. No, you gotta. No. And we kind of passed the torch to Tampa Bay. Because when we won the NFC South, it's either us or Tampa. We wanted four straight seasons, and now Tampa Bay's going with five straight seasons?
Right.
No, the Falcons are still the Falcons in Carolina, you know, but no. The bottom line is you got to give us hope. Same thing with LSU. It's all tied in. Now, with Tulane, there was hope until they got waxed by the Roadrunners.
But they could get some of that hope back, but a big win in Memphis, yeah.
But I don't know with the committee. Would you still – now, 16-team playoff, let's say Tulane would win their conference. Right now, I think Memphis – I mean, I don't know. Tulane – struggled against Army. You can maybe struggle. Army lost to Tarleton State. It sounds like a condiment or something.
Taking a break here on Sports Talk. When we get back, we'll wrap things up. But right after this on WWL. Say goodnight to the Hoodats.
All right. Bon nuit, les gens. Good night, people. Hoodat, go Saints.
Coming up next, Pels basketball, folks.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.